Hi there, and welcome to this episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward.
Today, we are really excited to welcome Brian Wallace to the podcast. Brian is a former University of Michigan football player who helped lead the Wolverines to 4 Big Ten championships from 1988 through 1991, including 3 Rose Bowl trips. He was also a state champion high school hockey player in Ohio, and even completed a triathlon after graduating from Michigan. But in 1997, Brian was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and since then, he's been fighting a different kind of battle. Today, Brian hosts the MS Michigan Man 64 podcast, where he shares his experiences living with MS and talks with others facing chronic illness, always emphasizing the attitude and resilience it takes to keep moving forward. Brian, we are so happy that you are here with us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here, and go blue.
Yeah, absolutely, go blue.
You are carrying your U of M roots so far forward. I mean, what can you tell us about how you came up with that name, and why was it important for you to keep that in the name of your podcast with Michigan?
So I played football for the University of Michigan from 1988 to 1991. I played 2 years with Bo Schembechler and 2 years with Coach Moeller. And I was 23 years old, and I got I actually got in a car accident. And when I had an MRI done, I was already done playing football. I had an MRI done, and they actually told me, "Hey, you have signs of MS. You might want to follow a neuro." But I ignored it, and I just kept on going on because I just got done playing football in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then at 27 years old, I got diagnosed with MS 4 years later. And I kind of took the mindset of playing football in Michigan and what they taught me, like the discipline, the commitment. And I put that into my MS, and I attacked my MS, you know, in the weight room, getting exercise and just taking care of my body. So fast forward to today where when I started my podcast, the Michigan Man, that's a term used by Bo Schembechler, who I played for. You know, if you graduate from the University of Michigan, you play football for him, you're a Michigan man. So that's where I coined that phrase, Michigan man. The MS in front of it is obviously because I have multiple sclerosis. And 64 is because that was the number that I wore when I played. I was number 64.
That's beautiful and a perfect summation of who you are and what we're talking about today. Were you completely blindsided when you received your diagnosis? I mean, you said you had preliminary thoughts or, you know, mentions of it, but was it blindsiding for you?
Yes. At 27, when I was going through my, just trying to get it figured out, you know, I didn't even really think about what they told me at 23. I forgot all about it. And then I kind of connected the dots after I got my diagnosis. But I was out on a run. I was training for a marathon, and I started the trip, and I started having vision problems. And that's when it threw the red flag up. I went to the doctor. They did their MRIs, and I get told I have MS. And I was like, okay, I've heard of it, but I really don't know a whole lot about it. How do we get rid of it? And then I found out it's chronic. I'm never getting rid of it. And, you know, back then in 1997, the only person that I really knew of that had MS was Annette Funicello. Mm-hmm. Back in the old days, Mickey Mouse Club. And I knew she was in a wheelchair. So I'm like, dang, I'm screwed. But, you know, I found out real quick that that's not the case. You're not, you know, you just got to. You gotta attack it, and you know your life's not over, and keep on going.
And it's interesting. I also was diagnosed in 1997. And when you say that about Annette Funicello, that was my first, that was the person that I kind of associated the disease with, a celebrity at that time. So it's just interesting, because to go back to 1997, I remember, I don't know about you, Brian, but I had neurologists that talked about don't overheat yourself and don't exercise, be careful with your activity. Did you have anything like that when you were first diagnosed?
So I had people that would tell me that, but my actual neurologist, after I got diagnosed, you know, I actually said to my neurologist, I'm like, hey, Dr. Hannah, you know, I love being in the weight room, and I love, you know, I love doing things outside. Do I need to like shut all this down? And he said, absolutely not, Brian. He goes, your body's going to know when you can't do something, but until then you do what you want to do. And I took that as, okay, green light, you can go to the gym. And that's the way I kind of did it.
That's fantastic that you were able to, you know, that you had it sounds like you had a good relationship with your neurologist from jump, and that he was very, yeah, that's great.
Something that, you know, when I read your story, I hear about you and where you came from and what you're doing. I mean, this is exactly how I had, well, not exactly, because obviously I didn't play for University of Michigan, but in my life with MS, I've always thought of this as being a competition, and that, you know, it's me against MS, and, you know, there's going to be days that I win, some days I lose, and just how do you move forward and do that? So then I'm looking to you. I mean, you were in four Big Ten championship teams, and I mean, you competed in the Rose Bowl, right?
Yes, I did.
Three
Rose Bowls and one Gator Bowl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I mean, those are things that are so storybook. And I mean, in that you were at University of Michigan, I mean, and that's a storied program. And not only that, I mean, you played for Bo Schembechler and Gary Muller. I mean, these are iconic, you know, historic coaches and everything. So looking back then at all that you did and everything you went through with, you know, competing for the University of Michigan, how does that compare to what you've had to do in your competition with MS?
Michigan actually prepared me for my MS, and I thank them for that every day. They, you know, being that I was so newly diagnosed after playing, I was still in that mindset that, you know, okay, you got an obstacle, you got to go around it. You got a defense that throws something different at you. You got to make your adjustment, and we got to figure it out to beat whatever team we were playing. And that's kind of the mindset that I took right off the rip. I'm like, okay, I got MS. It is what it is. I'm only 27 years old. I probably got another 30 or 40 years left on this earth. So you better figure this out and keep on plugging. And I just kind of took that mindset, and you know, and I've had downtimes. I'm not going to sit here and lie. You know, I was able to work for 20 years. I lost my ability to work. And, you know, that was a very big hit on my mental health. But you just got to figure it out, and you got to keep on fighting. And I've been able to do that for 28 years now.
That's strong, and that's impressive. So after you graduated from college, what sort of work did you leave Ann Arbor? And I mean, I'm just curious, where did you go after Ann Arbor, if you don't mind?
Oh yeah, sure. So I like everybody that plays, you know, you want to play in the NFL, but I fell short of that. So I graduated with my degree in communications. I came back to the Cleveland area. That's where I grew up, in Ohio. And my mom was single. My dad died when I was 15 years old. And I told my mom when I went up to Michigan that, you know, hey, if I make it to the NFL, I'll take care of you the rest of your life. Don't worry about it. And I didn't. So I still came back to Ohio just to be by my mom, because she was by herself. And she ended up getting diagnosed with breast cancer in 2001. So I needed to be around her anyway. So I ended up working for the state of Ohio in the Department of Corrections in a prison for 20 years. I was in middle management, and on the unit, inside the unit, I worked with a lot of mental health inmates and chemical dependency. And I did that for 20 years. I really enjoyed doing it. But, you know, I knew when I had to call it quits, it was time to call it quits. And it was a big hit to my identity, you know, because, I mean, that was who I was for 20 years. But that's just part of what MS is.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, just to go from playing football and then getting a communications degree and winding up doing, it sounded like, you know, counseling kind of within the prison system. That's a crazy trajectory, or just a wild.
It is.
You know, and that's really fulfilling. And then when you stopped working, I'm sure that was hard. It's never like you had a choice. I don't walk anymore. And I often say, oh, when I stopped walking, I didn't exactly make that decision to stop. But when the disease kind of made it pretty apparent, I was not going to continue walking safely. Sounds kind of like you with working. You're not going to keep working. So what keeps you going when you're not working in the traditional sense?
I have always been, ever since I worked in the prison, and I you know, knew inmates when they got in trouble, they would go to segregation and they would be in isolation. And I knew how guys, you know, if they did a long time in segregation, how they struggled mentally. So I knew that the isolation part was going to be tough. So I started preparing when I went out on disability. It took me a year to figure this out. It wasn't like I figured it out right overnight, but I just started to do things to occupy my mind. I got into a real a game on my phone, because I was a golfer before I wasn't able to do it. And so I found a game on my phone that is a golf game. So it occupied my time. Now my wife and I have a little small place up on Lake Erie. And we go up there in the summer. That occupies my time. I go out fishing with friends of mine. And then I do this podcast. This occupies my time. I mean, I when I record episodes with people all over the world, they do the same thing. You know, they'll find maybe they're into art, or they're into diamond art, or they're into crocheting, or they're into knitting, or, you know, they just got to find something to occupy their time. Because I think that's the hardest part of the journey is the mind, you know, the body stuff, losing the ability to walk, losing your hand, that stuff really, it's not fun. But the mind part, it's always been the hardest part for me. Like, what, you know, because you never get a break from it. You're always thinking about it. You wake up with that mess, you go to sleep with that mess, and everywhere in between.
Yeah, and it's always on your mind, like you've said. And I think it's interesting, you were part of a team when you were in college, and then you worked in the prison system, and you talked about isolation with the inmates. But Dan and I often comment that multiple sclerosis can be very isolating. You know, if you lose your friend group or your career or anything like that, that can be very isolating. And that's why we have stayed involved with the National MS Society or the MS Foundation. Do you, we belong to support groups online and in person. Do you belong to groups like that, or have you been involved with the MS Society?
So I'm very big in the TikTok community. I get into lives that you can have 9 people up in a box, and you can actually see them if they want to be on camera. And that is the community that I've been involved in for the last couple of years. It's a really, really awesome community. There's a lot of MSers in there. There's people with POTS. There's people with Parkinson's. It's just the people that all have a chronic disease, and they get it. They don't judge. And that's probably my biggest support group that I use.
That's nice. And we should link to that in the show, like in the podcast notes. Just link to that, you know, those kind of resources, because it is important that you're not alone with the disease. So, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I'm doing my best to not fangirl out right now, Brian. But my dad was a big Michigan. He was a season ticket holder. And we went to games when you were playing with Elvis. And so just to talk to you now, I think that's pretty incredible. And for me, when I was diagnosed, I remember I went to the neurologist. I was diagnosed on maybe a Thursday. You know, you get this earth-shattering diagnosis. And the first question I asked my doctor was, does this mean I can't go to the Michigan game on Saturday? So,
oh,
you know, sometimes has the MS gotten the way for you in the way you want to do things? Or, I mean,
it has. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I used to love the golf. I golfed up until about maybe 10 years ago. And, you know, it's gotten the way of that. But I figure other things out. I still enjoy the game. You know, I still can go out fishing. I haven't been to a Michigan football game in probably 10 years. The last time I went, you know, I was still able to walk. So I miss being able to do that. But I mean, you understand, like, you know, getting a wheelchair, that's a big step, because if you go through insurance, you got to get a lift for your truck, and, you know, it costs money. And, you know, I would love to be able to afford one of those fold up ones that are lighter, transport ones. But, you know, that's one of the struggles with MS. But I mean, those are the limitations that I have now. But, you know, it is what it is. You just got to keep on fighting and figuring it out.
And you can figure it out with the resources, like you said, with the communities. Yeah. And I remember Dan and I, we were able to go and sit in handicap accessible seats at the big house. And that was incredible. But, you know, 101,000 people in a wheelchair makes it a little difficult. So that we're a little bit older, we prefer to watch the games on TV. So,
yeah, I get it. Yeah. I mean, you know, it would be great to go to a game someday. But I mean, I enjoy watching them on TV. It's not going to make me, you know, less excited to sit there and cheer for them.
So. No, and you can have your bathroom and your refreshments right there and temperature controlled. Yes. So that's good.
You know, before we started getting into this podcast, you know, we talked about, you know, the background and everything on the MS Michigan Man 64 podcast, and we will provide links in our show notes for everyone to go to the podcast and check it out. I mean, how did you decide, A, that this was what you wanted to do, but then, like, how did you shape the narrative of how you wanted the conversations to go or who you wanted to feature in the podcast?
So that's a great question. So when I first started this, you know, I checked out a couple of different podcasts around that talked about MS, and they sounded so negative. So my first thing is, you know, I can talk about how negative this disease is all day long, like everybody else, but I really don't want to do that because I've been doing it for, at that time, 26 years. And there's been a lot of great things that have happened to me in those 26 years. So I just kind of wanted to keep it positive. And then, you know, when I'm on TikTok, I meet people on there and the lies and just hearing their stories. That's pretty much where I find a lot of the people that I've talked to. I actually found the girl that does the lead-in song for my podcast. Her name is Amber Kay. She's from New Jersey, and she's got an incredible voice, and she has MS. And then my artist for the cover art, his name is Johnny. He is from right outside Cleveland. He's only about an hour, half hour from me. He did the art, and he has MS. So everybody that I have tied to this podcast, I want, you know, they have MS, they understand it. And that's kind of what was my vision from the start, is that I want everybody to benefit from this podcast, from what you hear to what we're doing.
Yeah, and that's important. Just to Dan and I also, you know, being diagnosed in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a lot of misinformation and a lot of negativity. And we don't want to put you know, sunshine on a pretty crappy disease at times, but we wanted to focus on the positivity and the things that we are still able to do. So
yep.
I hear you with that.
And I honestly, and Brian, it's just, I always say, it's like, I have no reason to suck up to you, but I'm just like, it's for real. Every time I listen to your podcast, I leave energized and optimistic because I really like just the honesty and the frankness, but just keeping it moving forward and dealing with the realities of the disease. And this is why I'm so grateful that you're here with us today talking about it, because you have a great thing going there. And so I really appreciate you sharing that with everyone. So again, go to acoupletakesonms.com. We'll have links to that podcast that you all need to check out.
So what does your next, I mean, it's hard, you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you see in the future for the next 10 years? Or what do you want to accomplish?
So I want to keep on doing this. I want to build this thing as big as I can. I want to spread the awareness about what it's like living with this disease, the good, the bad, the ugly. I'm actually going to be going and doing some public speaking. I got invited to an MS summit down in Louisville, Kentucky in May, May 30th. I will actually be having links to it. I'll be talking more about it as we get closer to it. It's with the lady that I recorded with. Her name is Phoebe, on my podcast platform. And then in June, I'm actually going to be going up to Michigan for a couple of different events and do for MS walks and talking with people up there. So I just want to keep on spreading awareness, you know, however I can do it. Just keep encouraging people to keep on fighting this disease and not to be afraid of it, because I know how scared I was and how alone that I felt at 27 when there was no internet around, there was nobody to really talk to. And now that we have these tools available to us, I don't want anybody to be scared like that. You know, I mean, there are people out there that can really walk you through and help you through that fear in the beginning of getting told you have MS.
Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. And Dan and we kind of got a glimmer in our eye when you said that you were coming up to Michigan to do some sort of MS walk, because certainly we, you know.
Keep us posted, Brian. We will drive to meet you.
Yeah, because we are
absolutely
involved with walks in Frankenmuth, and we do some of the Southern Michigan walks.
I'm going to be at the Frankenmuth walk. I'm already booked for it, so I will definitely see you up there.
And yes, we will be there. It's a good time. It's a good time, and lots of, if you like chicken and German food, Frankenmuth is great.
I'm looking forward to it. My wife and I have not seen Frankenmuth yet, and my daughter has, and she said that town is just amazing, how they decorated in Christmas all year round. So I'm looking forward to it.
That's good. That's good. So you have your family, you have one and just your daughter?
I have a son and a daughter, yeah. They were born with me having MS. They've never known me without MS, so they've lived with it their whole lives. They're 20, 24 and 27 now.
And if you don't mind me asking, were you at all nervous about having children?
Yes, I was. Back when I was, I'm on my second marriage. I went through a divorce. But when I first got married, when I was 27, that question was asked to my neurologist. My then at the time wife and I both had concerns about it being hereditary. And at that time, my neurologist told me, you know, there's no scientific evidence one way or another. It's just a personal choice on, you know, how you want to decide on what you want to do. And we sat down and talked about it, and we both said, you know, hey, we want to both have kids. We decided to have kids.
That's brave, and that's a good attitude to take on. And I'm sure your children are very appreciative that you took that on.
Oh yeah, my kids are great. My daughter is a school teacher. And she actually is very understanding about chronic disease. And my son is the same way. He works for the post office, and he's very aware. And I think just growing up, you know, teaching them when dad was having an episode, you know, hey, I'm just down for a couple of days. I'll be back. Don't worry about it. And, you know, and even I even made humor as part of them growing up. If I fell, I would always tell them, you know, just make sure dad's okay. Then I want you guys to grade me on my fall. Give me out of 10, give me a grade. You know, yeah. and they would sit there and grade me. They'd be like, oh, that was an 8.5, dad. You know, yeah. I mean, you just got to make a joke out of it.
Yep, and you sometimes. Do. And now, yeah. Do you feel like your disease is pretty well managed?
Yeah, my last DMT I was on was Ocrevus. I finished that 2-year cycle of that med about 18 months ago. It'll be 2 years in June. So I really haven't done a DMT since then. And that's a really nice feeling. I haven't had to stick myself with a needle, take a pill, go for an infusion in almost 2 years. So, and I'm doing good. I'm holding my own. I'm still upright and walking with a walker or a cane, just depending on how far it is. If it's too far, I'll get in my wheelchair and somebody will push me, or I'll wheel myself because I can still use my hands and my arms. I just keep on using what I can, and I keep on using it to the best of my ability, and you know, keep on going through life.
Yeah, that's a really powerful message, and just that. Maybe your life doesn't look exactly like you thought 27 years ago, but you're moving forward and you're upright and you're keeping going. So that's great. That's strong.
Something that stuck with me, you know, as you were talking about things and when you were first diagnosed and stuff, and when you talked about being scared and everything, I think that is such a powerful thing to hear. I mean, for everybody, I mean, just in the sense that 97 that you were diagnosed, and that was only like 6 years after you know, played on, you know, yeah. Rose Bowl championship football teams and everything. So it is just, and, yeah. and you've got this team, this network of Michigan football and the Michigan family and everything, but it's just like how, I want to say reassuring is that for just, you know, people that didn't play football and anybody who's newly diagnosed to be scared. And it's just like that gives it, puts such a real face on this disease. It's like, it's okay to be scared because something like this scared, you were offensive line. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Like,
yes,
like, sir. Like awesome. An offensive lineman from the Michigan football that it's like there. So it's real and it is cause for concern. But at the same time, you surround yourself with the people to help you move forward. And so I guess with that, it's a question of, you know, for somebody who's newly diagnosed, what would you tell them about being scared, or how do you move forward when you're diagnosed with this disease?
I wish that back when I was diagnosed that it would have been kind of encouraged to get mental health therapy. Whether it be a counselor, or go see a psychiatrist, get a psych eval, get a neuropsych eval, because that wasn't really addressed back in 97.
Right.
And, you know, the mental part wasn't addressed. And I think that is still to this day, from like talking to people that were just diagnosed 5 years ago, it's not really mentioned a lot today. And I think that is something that is wrong with the way they diagnose chronic disease. I don't think they address the mental health part of it at the diagnosis. But that's my advice. If anybody is going through, especially MS or any other kind of chronic disease that's life altering, take care of the mental health part of it as early as you can, because you don't want to get behind on it.
And as often, you know, revisit it. I think you don't, it's not just one and done, you know, Brian, like you, as your life changes, as the disease changes, you may need to see, you know, reach out for those resources again. So Well, I think that's really good advice.
I think it's huge advice, is because that is something, you know, and when you started talking about it, it's like a lot of times people don't talk about that. You know, I think a lot of times people say get on a DMT or do this, do that. But I mean, it's truly just that whole mental health thing that was sound.
And that whole picture of wellness, I think that's what I'm taking away from just how you're handling and how you're attacking this disease.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. But
I was going to say, anything else, Brian, that we didn't talk about? I mean, we could go on and on and on, because like just to talk about your time at Michigan and football, but
and just life in general.
Yeah. So, I mean, anything else, when I texted you and said, hey, would you be on our podcast? Something that you want to say that we didn't touch on?
I just think that it is important for people to understand what it's like living with a chronic disease. And just spreading the awareness. I love what you're doing. I know we just kind of met, you know, within the last couple of weeks, but I've been checking out your podcast, and I just love it. You know, the only way to understand this disease is to listen to us talk. You know, I've been doing this 28 years now, and that's the biggest frustrating part about living with this disease, is that you got family and friends and employers that just don't get it. You know, they don't get it. They don't ask questions. They're afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid of us. We're not going to bite. I don't want pity. I want people to understand. Just understand.
Yes. And that's, again, just a really powerful statement, is I don't want pity. I want you to understand and see what we're going through and be patient. You know, it takes, I don't know about you, Brian, but everything takes twice as long as I think. You know, if I say I'm going to be there in 5 minutes, no, give me 10, you know, I will be there. But the patience that you have to pack it with this disease, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, Brian, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us and chat today. I really appreciate you being here and appreciate all that you're doing for everyone in the MS community. And again, we will have links to Brian's story and to his podcast on our show notes. It's on our podcast and at a couple takes on MS.com. But Brian, thank you again so much for everything.
And once
thank
again,
you guys for having.
Yeah, go thank ahead. You. No, I was just going to say we really appreciate it. And once again, we are a couple takes on MS.
I'm Dan Digman, and I'm walking.
I'm Jennifer Digman, and I'm rolling.
And together, we're moving forward.
We hope you enjoyed our podcast, and please tell others about it.
And be sure to subscribe, rate us, and share your review to let us know how we're doing and what you want us to talk about in future episodes.
Email us at acoupletakesonms@gmail.com and follow us on our blog, acoupletakesonms.com.
Until next time, take care and keep moving forward.